Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, April 26, 2021, and this is episode 222, nice even 222, of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco, the surging San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today, the founder of TortureCast, one Willie Dills. How you doing, Willie?
I'm good, man. It's been a lot of fun watching Giants baseball recently, so life is good.
It's been pleasant, and Eric from Las Vegas, what do you think about this? What's going on, man?
14-8, like Willie said
might
before
even be
the show.
Exceeding your expectations. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Willie said it before the show, right where we expected it, huh? Mm-hmm. It's so much fun to watch Giants baseball right now. We just gotta kind of hang on, see how long it lasts, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, we got a short turnaround. We recorded late last week on Thursday, so we only have the Miami series to record, but you know us. We'll still babble for an hour or something like that. The Giants did take three of four from Miami, and after losing two out of three in Miami and always having that bad luck against the Marlins, it was nice to kind of turn the tables a little bit. Giants are now 14-8. Who would have thunk that? One game back of L.A. and still the second best record in all of baseball. That's weird. We expected the Dodgers to be at the top of all of baseball, but the Giants to be number two after 22 games.
Well, to be a game back, and the Dodgers are absolutely on fire.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they've been doing what they've been doing, what we expected them to be doing. We're clearly a big surprise to everybody in baseball right now. And you can't necessarily say that somehow it's like some strength of schedule thing. I mean, I guess we've had a lot of games against Miami, but you know, that's a team that gives us some trouble. So, you know, it's like it feels kind of legit, right?
Man, you're going to take it no matter who you play, right? I mean, it's true. We talked about this last week. Look, Giants have played the Padres three times. Other than that, they have 35 games remaining against the Dodgers and Padres.
Yeah, we haven't played the Dodgers yet, I guess. That's the biggest thing that anybody could really say. But
yeah,
I don't know, man. We play them tough every time anyway.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, it's so funny because, the baseball the Giants have been playing has been entertaining and pretty fundamentally good and sound. Wish the offense was a little bit better. You know, the games are a little close, a little heart-wrenching at times, but they're playing well. The Dodgers-Padres series the last 2 weekends, have you guys been watching that?
Great baseball.
I've seen some highlights. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. There's just a lot of it seems like there's a lot of animosity between these teams right now, at least on social media.
So. I hate that Tatis Jr. is a Padre because he's so freaking likable right now. I mean, the kid went off this weekend covering his eye like he did at Bauer, calling back to spring training. And then apparently he did some sort of Bauer strut after the second home run he hit off.
Yeah,
this is the kind of life we usually see in the Giants-Dodgers. It's kind of fun, actually, to see the Padres and Dodgers going at it like this.
I think it's funny because the Giants are sitting back all quiet going, you know, by the way, we're still better than the Padres right now. So everyone's like focusing on, oh, my God, the Padres are trying to dethrone the Dodgers as the NL West champs. And it's like, well, there's another team kind of in the mix right now. So everyone seems to be ignoring that. So, I mean, it's fine. It's good that the Giants are kind of playing the sleeper right now. And, you know, even last week, they still on a lot of like the ESPN national poll was still like ranked 19th in all of baseball. This week, I think it was.
Are we at least above the A's this time? Or
No. Shit, the A's won 13 in a row.
Yeah, that's
until
true.
Until they
that's
lost
true.
Yesterday, that's so true. I mean, they've been on
fire. I know, yeah. When it was just funny because when they were struggling like hell and we were actually coming out the box hot, they had us below them. But I mean, I get why. I mean, look, everybody thinks this is a fluke. This is like just a hot start.
That's
well,
what is,
I mean, you know? Only had him six yesterday in his unofficial top 10. Only he'll put one out every Sunday night.
That's
baseball.
What I was going to say. Only finally is the first like national guy who's like, okay, you know, maybe the Giants are better than we thought. Mm-hmm. So he put him at six. So
He still had the Padres at second, though. So, I mean,
wow.
I know. It's not just based on record. Otherwise, that'd be easy to rank, right? It's like, oh, sure. This is the best team and this is the worst team. But,
well, yeah, at the end of the season, that's how they're going to rank them. Just FYI.
Yeah, the end of season power rankings, you know, the Hobson 500 team is like number three.
Buster Olney thinks.
Yeah. I think 162 wasn't enough to really show how.
Those are my favorite power rankings of the year because these guys will rank them and they're like two teams that didn't make the playoffs, they'll be above two teams that did. Mm-hmm. They'll be like, well, I thought they were better than they were. Well, yeah. They didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, they should have been.
Wasn't so good. All right, well, let's get into it here. We got four games to kind of talk about, but game one. Nice, crisp 3-0 win. Aaron Sanchez. And this is funny, too, because this is one of the games I was considering covering, but it's a long story about vaccinations and negative COVID tests. I couldn't get my test in time. But I was thinking, oh, crap, Aaron Sanchez, the way he looked in his last start in Miami, even though he only gave him one run over five, it was really rickety. I mean, he was throwing 86, 87 tops. He had no control. I just didn't think he was going to do it. He did great. I mean, another five innings, no runs, and two hits. Casale had one of the few big hits he's had, maybe the only big hit he's had this season so far. It was a two-run single in the first. The Giants scored three in that first frame, and that was it. That capped the scoring for the entire game. And Casale caught his fifth consecutive shutout, which, I mean, that's crazy. We're at this point, we're like 19 games into the season, and he's caught five straight shutouts. That's weird, man.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what is the actual record here. It's a really hard record to look up because every time you try to look up shutouts, I'm like, okay, but by catcher.
Yeah.
Stop telling me all about all these, you know, stop. I know. I get it. Don Drysdale, you know, Oral Hershiser. I got it. I'm looking for catchers. So I still am kind of confused on exactly where that is, but it's not apparently not a major league record. Apparently a catcher has caught more.
I'm not sure. I thought he tied maybe like the modern day record. And
yeah,
that's
it. Was the Pirates guy, right? Like a few years ago, not even that long ago.
Cervelli. Yeah, he had five in a row, so he had tied the modern day record. And we'll get into, you know, the fourth game, but man, he was really close to getting six. Really close to six, but I mean, what are you gonna do? That's a pretty insane.
You know what? I'm just gonna count it as the record because I don't care what baseball thinks about what counts or doesn't count anymore.
Well, if you consider seven innings, which another guy did something in seven innings, maybe can consider it.
60 games is a championship, you know, but seven innings isn't a no hitter.
Going around right now.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No, but when you look at this Giants 3-0 win in the first game of the series, they just came off of a road trip where they blew the last game, ended up losing in extras, and they came back and they scored three in the first inning right away against Miami, kind of set the tone for the series and so far the homestand. I mean, Ruff hit a ball like 110 miles an hour in that top of the first that got over Dickerson's head and left and almost took his glove off. And then they just didn't need to do anything. Apparently, Casale is just the shutout machine. I mean, this is kind of ridiculous how it's happening. I mean, they didn't throw a shutout all year last year. 60 games, the Giants didn't shut out a single opponent. They've done it five times with the backup catcher this year.
Yeah, I can't even explain that. Like, what the hell, you know? Have they even had one with Posey? Like, I didn't look into that. Not one. So, I mean, that's more than coincidence, don't you think? I mean, you think, like, if the staff, you know, was good no matter who was – I mean, they're good anyway. They've been fantastic. But you'd think if you had five shutouts to begin the season and your primary catcher who catches more has zero and your backup catcher who's caught less has five, he's got to be some sort of connection there.
Doesn't this totally blow up the narrative of Buster being back behind the plate is going to make the pitching staff better? Yeah. I mean, it really doesn't, but it's just really kind of
fun. It is really weird to say that. But
well, the other thing, too, is usually a backup catcher is catching like one guy, right?
Yeah, a lot of times
he's somebody's guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's not really been the case with Casale. Like, he's just, you know, it's just when we need to give Buster a day off. It's like the day game after night game thing, or that, you know what I mean? It's just kind of, he's just slotted in there.
Well, if you look at the last week in seven games, Casale played in three of them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's the guy when we need the guy. He's not, he's not like, oh, we have, you know, a knuckleballer, and so we got to have this other guy. Because I can kind of see it there. Like, maybe that guy's on a streak, right? That pitcher, that particular pitcher. like when Tim Lincecum had his, you know, favorite catcher and stuff. But that's not what's going on. So
no,
he's just for something he's doing is working really, really well.
Yeah, it's not Joey Bart and Johnny Cueto. We're not having those issues right now. So it's kind of nice to see that. So why don't we go ahead and take a look? For those of you listening to the audio podcast, we do stream this live every week on Facebook Live. So we do have video attached to this. We're going to take a look at the condensed highlights for game one of the series. And here we go.
It's going to be quick. The game was over.
Driven to left. And it's over the head of Dickerson. Coming in to score is Yastrzemski. Rupp's got a double.
Longoria to third. Yastrzemski scoring, and the Giants have a run here in the first.
That's good base running, by the way.
Lead. And here is Kurt Casale to try and drive some more people in. 1-1 to Kurt Casale. He has power.
He's
big
a light-hitting backup guy. And we'll take a shot at one of these singles, but we'll take
he's got three hits.
And it's kicked by Dickerson.
He might have been thrown out of the play if he had the ball rough that ball.
Possibly, but we only needed the two anyway. We only needed the one. So.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that was Therapy Bunny.
If I didn't know better, I think that bunny was fake.
So you know what they do after Easter? They go to ball games. We just found that out.
Apparently, she had a restaurant she lost in the pandemic, and that's her therapy bunny.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and the bunny has its own Instagram, but it's like Alex the Rabbit or something like that.
And up comes Adam Duvall.
Bringing like a therapy rabbit. Former Giant who's really had
an excellent career. He was only a Giant briefly. Was drafted by the Giants, developed by them.
San Francisco's the only place that can happen.
Minor league numbers for the Giants, but was traded away.
I wonder what the restriction is on the animal type. You know
is
what I mean?
Strike three call.
Look at that thing, 80 miles
he
an
hour.
He
got him with the changeup. Duvall can't believe it. Two down, second strikeout for Sanchez.
His last start, his fastball was slower than Alcantara's
Mike Yastrzemski. They are two of 11 Vanderbilt Commodores.
Matt mentioned after the game that he wasn't feeling well. You got to wonder if it's a vaccine-related
more players
thing.
Than any other college.
Two, yeah.
3-2. And there's a called strike three. They've just flipped the inside corner.
Well, it's 3-0, but maybe some concern is Evan Longoria is out of the game. And the Giants have moved a bunch of people around. Flores goes from first to third. Ruff goes from left to first.
Tight left hamstring, so not strained or pulled, just tight.
Welcome back. There is Alex the Greatest.
And we'll talk about
watch
Longo
this.
Later, too. Longo
the owners
is still
or the
listed
parents or whatever you want to call it
hamstring.
Want a ball. And Alex almost
he almost hit the bunny.
He doesn't want any part of this anymore.
Very exciting moment here. And we're hoping that Aaron Sanchez is fine. And I'm assuming he is. He looked great on the mound. Five scoreless innings. But now in the sixth, he gives way to a young right-hander making his major league debut. He's got tremendous stuff. Gregory Santos, who's never pitched in a game above A-ball, and it's been a while even since that, but he's been pitching at the alternate site, has made appearances in big league spring training games. Santos ready to go on the mound for the Giants.
As now we're going to get a pinch hitter for the Marlins, Magnus Sierra's going to hit for Pistano, so this night's going to be over as well.
Here's the 3-2 pitch. Slider struck him out looking. And then Casale tosses that ball over to the Giants dugout to be put in a safe place as a memento for Gregory Santos. He strikes out the first batter that he faces in the big leagues.
This is a single in the first, fly ball left in the third.
0-2 pitch. He struck it out swinging. And a mighty cut by Jazz Chisholm on a really nasty slider that broke down and in and well out. All right,
he's
here
fun
we go,
to watch,
ninth inning, Jake McGee,
well, he's like from Nassau,
very
so.
Ably as the Giants closer this year. Jake McGee out of the bullpen. And here is Miguel Rojas.
Got him, and that's the ball game. McGee strikes out the side, and Casale, what does he do? He catches another shutout. That's five in a row for the Giants' backup catcher. So congratulations.
Fourth catcher since 1906 to catch five shutouts over five straight starts.
A remarkable accomplishment, but it gives you an idea of the kind of confidence that this Giants staff has in Casale.
All right. Well, one hell of a game. I mean, you know, these shutouts, I think we can all kind of get used to. So it was a good way.
Fun.
And, By the way, the Giants right now are 8-2 at home as well, like you said, Eric. So this was just kind of continuing that streak. But game two, they go back in and they win 5-3. Alex Wood, his first home start. Was it his first home start, I believe? Yeah, because his first start was on the road. He gave up a leadoff home run to Jazz Chisholm. And then after that, he's like, okay, I'm not going to allow another hit for seven innings. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, he just decided I'm not going to allow any more hits. So it was 5-1 in the eighth inning. So it's a 4-run lead, and you know Tyler Rogers, who's on pace to set a major league record for appearances in a season, and then Jake McGee for a closer has been used quite often too. Kapler trotted them both out in the eighth and the ninth. Little weird because as it started, we were kind of like, okay, Tyler Rogers got a rubber arm, and you know whatever, I guess. But then McGee was really a curious decision in the ninth with a 4-run lead and other options in the bullpen, and I don't know if it was something that they were afraid of. What's happened with Whistler and Peralta with blow and leads, maybe that's it. And I know Kapler later said it gives us the best chance to win the game. But sure enough, McGee goes out there and with two outs, Wilmer Flores, who's not noted for his defense, but Longo was, of course, out, you know, had a nice one-hopper, had 1,000 years to throw, and just chunked it in the dirt, and Belt couldn't come up with it.
Yeah.
Then that allowed Aguilar to come up, and then he launches one. Actually, it was... I think that was the one that was not the laser shot. That was the one that was wind aided.
Yeah, we have to think when it comes to Aguilar home runs.
I know, because he had three.
What a weekend.
He had it was his first three the entire season.
I mean, look, Caselli was going to get six. It's just this guy was like, I got to get my home run in today. So, sorry. I got to get my daily home run intake. So
I got to start this in San Francisco. But yeah, wind aided anyway. It made it 4-2. And it definitely added a lot more pitches to McGee's. You know, night, which was unfortunate. No earned runs there, of course, with two outs. But it was just one of those things that we were all questioning in real time. What the hell's going on? And then this happens. And that kind of like takes him out for the next game or two. Well, for most, you know, instances, I guess you could say. But, you know, what do you think? We wanted to get into this, Eric, because you and I were kind of on the same page. I don't know about you, Willie. Did you have a problem with McGee coming in with a 4-run lead?
I don't think it was necessary. I think we had plenty of guys we could be using because it's clear that we're going to have a lot of close games, apparently. So you probably want to save your closers for, I mean, apparently we kind of have a couple options here, which, you know, we talked about a little bit last time, but we have a primary and yeah, let's just stick with the 3-run games, you know, like let's just, we don't need to be throwing him out there when he didn't need work, I guess is the point. Right.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's the big thing. I mean, you throw in a closer with a non-safe situation when they need work. They haven't pitched in, you know, 6 days or something like that. But
this is
not that situation. In fact, he was just coming off the COVID, you know, illness list because of the vaccine. He had already pitched a couple of times, had kind of a rough outing, gave up a home run the following outing. So he had a lot of innings under his belt. It just seemed Cap, you know, he was asked about that and he said, well, I thought they gave us the best chance to win. Well, okay, maybe that's technically true, but it'd be the same if you had an 8-run lead in the ninth. They give us the best chance to win. You know, how far do you carry that thought process? You know, I just thought it was odd.
It was very confusing. And it snowballed into the Saturday night game with bringing in Santos in a tie game in the ninth inning after Gausman has a beautiful performance. Like, No offense to Alex Wood, but I kind of want to see them back up Gausman in that situation on a Saturday instead of Friday night. That's the time you can bring Whistler in. That's the time you can, you know, even give Duvall or Santos that shot. You know, I understand that McGee doesn't seem to trust anybody. I mean, not McGee. Kapler doesn't seem to trust anybody but McGee and Rogers in the bullpen. But, yeah. Obviously, they give you the best chance to win. That's why they're in those spots. It's just so frustrating.
But, you know, devil's advocate or whatever. I will say, like, with the three batter rule, it's not quite the same as it used to be.
That's
where you could bring in somebody, he gives up like a hit or a walk or a home run, and now you can go right to your closer. If you bring in a guy who's not your closer and he completely blows it for three straight batters, now you bring your closer in a really tense situation. It's a little different now. So, I mean, there is that. And obviously the manager's not supposed to manage for stats. So he's not supposed to manage for saves. He's supposed to manage for wins. So there's my devil's advocate. But I still think, you know, we're gonna use him a lot regardless.
Yeah, there's no doubt the three batter minimum rule definitely comes into play in some of these decisions, because in the past, like if it was Bochy, you know, and he doesn't put in his closer and the first guy is out there and he just doesn't look good, and even after one batter, if not two, he can pull the trigger and then the closer's in a safe situation. But now you have to wait till three batters have passed. It's possible he loads the bases in that time and then he's got a real problem out there.
But I still don't like it. I'm just saying that's my devil's advocate argument.
No. And that's probably why he went in the direction he did. But even with that being said, when you have a 4-run lead, you have some wiggle room with the three batters. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Say Duvall comes in and loads the bases. At least you could bring somebody in and try to stem the damage. At that point, somebody like a McGee, not a McGee, like a Rogers at that moment. So I totally understand what you're saying, Willie. It's frustrating to see our manager, who came in with questions about how he managed the bullpen, continue to have questions about how he's managing the bullpen. You know, it's really our only gripe as Giants fans, because when you look at the games that they've won, I mean, the games that they've lost, so many of these games, they're, what are they, in one-run games? They're 6-3 in one-run games. And I think they've all been over the last week too, with the Phillies. It does. Every game feels like it's that close. And so I get why Kapler feels that way, but we saw the snowball effect happen on Saturday. Cause I think we could be talking about a sweep right now, had he done some things differently in this Friday.
Sure.
It's possible. Good old butterfly effect.
I will say this though. It's like everything we're used to tonight, with baseball is different. With all these stupid rules.
That's very true.
All right, let's take a look at the audio highlights here, the video highlights. And Buster Posey, it's his 1,000th game behind the plate. Last night,
three doubles, a triple, three homers, knocked in six. And here's a towering fly ball, long way back, right center field, Jazz Chisholm.
I credit Chisholm here. He's like, we're not getting shut out again. He got a fastball cookie. And he just laid into it.
Grab a 1-0 lead, one batter in tonight.
This is where Alex Wood said, all right.
Just unloaded.
No more hits for you.
And of course, Yastrzemski, who had a terrific year last year, but off to a sluggish start here in 2021.
Here's a swing and a drive by Yastrzemski to left field and pretty deep.
This one did not look like it was getting out, but this is where the conditions were.
Just over the wall and maybe with a push from the wind. A home run, Mike Yastrzemski to the opposite field. Giants take a 2-1 lead.
Seven strikeouts for Wood, working on a one-hitter, pitching with a 2-1 lead. And the Jazz Chisholm.
Swinging a line drive right back to Wood, who makes the catch.
A screaming liner right back Jazz. To the pitcher. Caught him.
Hand on the hip.
Catch it.
Really, dude. And Chisholm's.
That called back to the whole Trevor Story, Jose Fernandez from years ago.
How can you catch that ball?
Adam Simber out of the bullpen.
Wood is so much fun to watch.
Last of the sixth inning, Giants had...
He's just so quirky, and he gets the ball, and he just chucks it right away.
And Simber is going to face Austin Slater. Simber, who's done a nice job. Slater bounces the ball to third. Birdie's got it across the first, and Simber gets out of the inning.
By the way, wasn't that first game less than 2.5 hours, I believe, that 3-0 game?
Their lead. Nice job pitching by Detweiler, and now Simber.
Here's Adam Duvall, who has struck out twice.
Hit to left center field, kind of hanging for Austin Slater. He's over and makes a catch.
Okay, what a here's great the other
first
thought.
Home start. Alex Wood went
the
seven.
The Giants scored their two runs to make it. Their three runs to make it a four-run game. After Rogers had already started warming up. And that's part of why I'm sure Kapler went through.
It's a liner into center field, base hit. Dubon comes in to score. Wilmer Flores comes through after the intentional walk. The strategy foiled. 3-1 Giants. Wilmer just hit a bullet right back up the middle. Richard Blyer, the left-hander, out of the bullpen against Brandon Belt. Two on, one out. Softly toward the middle on the ground. Pass the diving attempt.
That's what you call a nice single.
Into center field. Here comes Yastrzemski around third. And he'll score without a play. Brandon Belt did not hit it very hard, but he placed it perfectly. It's 4-1 Giants. Just a little chopper past the mound. And Chisholm, who was shading Belt to pull and playing in a little bit, had no angle. Rojas went over to cover the bag at second. He had no chance to get the ball.
Well, Belt's got blazing speed, though Chisholm is
a matchup where if Ruff could get a ball in the air, he
got Wilmer Flores at third. If it's deep enough, maybe you get another run home. Swings, hits a fly ball right center field. We'll see if it's deep enough. Cooper comes in, makes a catch. Flores tags. Here comes the throw. It's well offline and cut off by the first baseman Aguilar on top of the mound. Sacrifice fly for Darren Ruff. 5-1 Giants.
Yeah, and at this point, Rogers had been warmed up, which is why Kepler went to him. I really think that that's the crux of the game. If he hadn't gotten Rogers hot, that snowball
effect might not have happened. Over the left. So now here is Jesus Aguilar, right-handed batter.
High in the air, deep down the left.
You're blowing it.
Toward the corner, at the wall, and...
Oh, there it is.
Home run. He just did get it out of there. First of the year.
Bring back the cars.
Dude, I know.
Let him go over the car.
Right.
Who pinned it against the wall there? Was that Ruff? No, that was, yeah, Mike Ruff.
Got him. And the Giants continue to play terrific baseball at home. They're now 7-1.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff.
7-1 at home at that point. Jeez.
Yeah, not so bad. Then game three, like we were just talking about, probably had a little bit of a carryover effect, but let's be honest, it's really hard to win when you don't score. The Marlins ended up winning 5-2. However, the game was tied at one going to the ninth when, you know, they gave up four in the frame, including that laser beam of a home run by Aguilar. I haven't seen a home run get up that quick in a long time. That thing was insane. Santos, who just made his Major League debut in game one, went out there, walked the leadoff batter, and then allowed that laser shot. But Kevin Gausman, again, was just fantastic. One run on just two hits, striking out 11 over eight innings. I mean, the dude is dealing right now. I mean, that $18 million the Giants picked up on his offer, his qualifying offer, is looking like a pretty good deal at this point. I was a little questioning it. I was like, $18 million for a guy who's he's a good pitcher, but... Now, so far, he's paying dividends for that. So
wasn't he picked like third or something overall?
Oh wow, really?
I know he was a high draft pick.
He was a very high draft pick. He had a lot of hype early on
for the Orioles, right?
I think. Yeah. And but the thing is, he's 30 now, so it's like, you know, it's like okay, coming into your own, but a lot of pitchers. 32, 33. It's kind of like where everything falls apart, you know.
Yeah,
so,
you know, look at like Matt Cain and stuff, right?
I'll take these couple years, man. If that's what he gives us, like it's working great right now, and that's all that matters. So let's go.
Yeah, he was picked fourth, and those 11 strikeouts I think tie a career high.
Okay,
nice. Yeah, I mean, the guy who can get 11 strikeouts in a game—that's okay. You're on my roster, bro. Let's go.
Yeah, his have you guys gone down the Baseball Savant website rabbit hole at any point?
No. It sounds like something I definitely want to do.
You're like, I don't know.
It's fun when you get caught there because you can end up there for hours.
Oh, man. Well, basically, they take all the StatCast data and crunch it, and they have all these automated systems where you can look at every single pitch from every single pitcher throughout the season, see where their exact location, their spin rate, their velocity – how many batted balls were barreled, what their launch angle was, what their exit velocity was, right? So you can start to get a feel on how consistent these pitchers are. And I went down the Kevin Gausman Savant hole last night, and it was really fun to kind of look at his velocity between his changeup, his fastball, where they are typically located, the spin rate, all that stuff, how often guys barrel the ball, you know, on each pitch. But one of the things I did notice, though, is because they calculate a lot of things like how often you swing and miss, how often you barrel the ball, and then how accurate you are to get your expected ERA. I don't know the complex algorithm, how they do that. But his ERA right now is, 2.14 or something like that? And I think on Baseball Savant, his expected ERA is like 3.79. It's basically a lot higher. And what that means is that there have been – you know, a few atom balls and balls that have been hit, you know, fairly hard, but it turned into outs. So I think it's just something to keep an eye on. Cause I don't think we think Kevin Gausman's going to have a 2.14 ERA at the All-Star break. That's not going to happen. He's going to correct a little bit to that mean. So it's just something to keep an eye on, but we'll take these starts the way they are right now. No doubt about that.
For sure.
All right. Well then game four yesterday, Giants hung on for a 4-3 win. Logan Webb looked like he did in spring training, finally. We were kind of waiting for this, right? 7 innings, 3 hits, 3 walks, no runs, and 8 Ks. Even had a two-run triple. That was the difference in the game. And it left the bat at 108 miles an hour. That thing was smoked. And we'll see the highlights here in a minute.
First Giants pitcher to get a triple since Timmy.
In 2013.
Same Marlins.
It was one of the best things about that whole situation was everybody posting that on Twitter. Getting to watch the Timmy triple again because that was one of the best highlights ever.
I know the Giants have adjusted their park slightly so that Triple's Alley is a little bit shorter, but it's still plenty for a triple. Still 415 to that corner instead of 421.
When you're playing in for a pitcher,
it's plenty. Outfielders,
they were nowhere near anywhere to get close to that ball. It was awesome.
They could not cut that train off. That was way, hit way too
Not hard. Even Gregor Blanco could have gotten to that ball from where they were playing him.
And you can hear Kipe's call. When we listen to Kipe's call, you can hear how he saw it split the gap, and he's like, you better get there, kid. It was weird to see the rain yesterday for part of the game. It just kind of looks funny when it comes to our ballpark because it's not something we see too often.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to the entire game on radio as I was driving around town with my son getting baseball gear and stuff. He starts baseball this week. It was, you know, here we are. We're only about 50 miles south of the park, and we were dry the entire day. So it was really weird to then come home and turn on the game and listen to it, of course, as well, and just hear how rainy it was up there. So it was like we were just, you know, missing it. But I think that's one of those situations where the Marlins are not coming back to San Francisco for the rest of the year. This is their one and only trip.
Yeah, they were going to make that game happen no matter what, dude. Krug was talking about it. He was like, yeah, they're going to put like 50 pounds of dirt out on this field today in between innings.
And what was funny is that I was in and out of stores and everything with my son. So it was like an hour and a half into the game and we're still in the third inning. And I'm like, why are we taking so long on this? And then it was like, oh, it's because they got to doctor the field between every inning. And that's what was delaying the game. I didn't realize that.
And to be fair, Webb, even though he pitched seven innings and he looked better, he didn't look better in a sense because he kind of was all over the place. I mean, he walked three guys. Didn't he hit a couple guys?
Well, like I was telling you, man, watch his movement. It's so insane right now. How do you control that? You
know what I mean? Yeah, he can't seem to. He doesn't always know where it's going.
He doesn't. He knows where he's starting it, but he doesn't know how much it's going to break. And everything he throws has movement on it. You know, so.
And with Cueto being out, he's going to get the chance to work it out though. With Cueto being out, I don't. See
that is true. We're going to give him plenty of blow here. So you're going out there every 5 days, bro, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say another thing, and you know, you guys have played ball. Playing in those conditions, especially as a pitcher trying to get the right grip on the ball, that's pretty good. It's pretty commendable that he had that performance in that, you know, those kind of slick, cool, wet conditions. So it's not usually going to benefit the pitcher in that case. The Giants were just four outs away from Casale's sixth consecutive shutout, Whistler came in and with two outs gave up a hit and then another bomb to Aguilar, who hit his like 72nd home run of the series or something. Just crazy.
Yeah, Aguilar said, nah, dude, no records on my watch.
Yeah, poor Whistler, though.
I think he said something to Casale when he came up to the plate. He's all, bro, your streak's gone.
I wouldn't be surprised.
They were a strike away right from getting out of that, too. The hitter before him, Rojas, he had him on a check swing that I think he went around on. But, you know, still on Whistler to get out of it. I mean, poor Whistler, he can't win for any situation.
No, he finally gets the first two guys out. And you're thinking, all right, he's going to lower his ERA. You know, we're going to get a clean inning. And then, you know, bloop and a blast. And it was like, and that was done. So then Rogers came in, made it a little uncomfortable. But again, the guy was a sub one ERA. It's not going to stay that way. But he still ended up hanging on for the save. He allowed a run. And he had two guys on with two outs and 4-3.
And Reddit was going wild. They were like, I told you. I told you. They're all waiting for the chance to pounce, dude.
That's what I think is so funny about it, is no matter how Rogers has completely exceeded all expectations thus far, the first time he slips up, everyone's going to go, see, I told you so. And it's like, he exceeded like the previous 13 times. Like,
he could be sub one into the All-Star break and then have one outing where a guy gets on second. And they'll be like, oh, man, here it comes.
I told you.
It's so weird that we're so pro Rodgers at this point, because I was not pro Rodgers to start this year.
I mean, it's just not either.
I'm like pro. I'm just like anti, you know, short memory or whatever. Like, right. I'm totally. You know, like, I hate that whole mentality of just like, yeah, but I went to a game one time and he sucked. So he definitely sucks all the time.
So, I remember this one time he blew a game. So like, yeah, totally. He sucks.
So screw that guy. Yeah. But I mean, look, we watch all the games. So not everybody does. Yeah, I get it.
It's true.
Yeah. I'm totally not busy. I totally not just catch up on highlights in some games. No, not at all. All right. Well, let's take a look at the highlights from game four of the series.
The Marlins will bring the infield in here in the rain and the wet. 1-1 the count to Ruff.
Ground ball, and Jazz makes the play, flips it to first. What a job by Jazz Chisholm Jr. Takes away a hit as the Marlins had him up the middle, and he keeps this game scoreless for the moment. What a play. What an amazing play by Jazz.
Giants have runners at first and third. Now Dubon will come up.
Bunts it. Coming in to score. Everybody safe. Dubon laid down a really nice bunt.
Yeah. Wet conditions definitely helped.
I love this play so much.
Yeah, oh, it's great. A little safety squeeze. Yeah.
And Dubon to second.
One get on your horse, man.
And here
you go.
Is Logan Webb.
There's a shot into the
here we go.
Right center field. He really crushed it. It is on two bounces to the 450.
Oh, we're listening to the Miller call.
Yep. It? This is what I listen
to. Lascella scores. Dubon scores.
Gotta listen to the Kipe call.
Yeah, Kipe's call is fantastic.
3-0 Giants.
He sounded like Ron Santo when he said it afterwards. He's like, I'm sorry, I went all Ron Santo there for a minute.
He just clobbered
it. First triple by a Giants pitcher since 2013 when Tim Lincecum did it.
Yastrzemski has moved over to third. Belt has broken his bat hitting a ground ball to third, and he has also struck out. Now the pitch, Belt drives one well to left field, going back Dickerson and near the warning track.
Belt's going oppo a lot lately.
That will get it done. Yastrzemski tags up, and he's
he had a good game one of these games. He was like on base four or five times in one of the games. He looks like he could be hitting up.
Of course, Dickerson to go back.
But he's one of the streakiest guys.
Right? Rookie, left-handed batter. Swing, he hits a fly ball to right field.
Hey man, Gallo, this is a line drive for the books, right?
Cooper, no, it falls.
So he's going to tell his grandkids.
That
is the first major league hit for Jason Vossler in his third at bat in the big league.
Dickerson at second, Birdie at first.
Pitch is grounded softly towards second. Lascella charges, has it, flips to second one. Dubon very niftily.
That was a nice throw off the opposite foot.
He's only allowed three hits. He's thrown 107 pitches.
Logan Webb, seven great innings. Three hits, no runs, in line to get his first victory of the year.
Everything
Giants
was
lead 4-0.
Yeah, look at how much sink that has.
Had a knack.
And they showed he went to the curveball early and the changeup late.
Time for number three.
Poor Whistler. But look at that.
Left field. It is deep. It is high. Right. It is far. And it's gone.
Aguilar's locked in.
Aguilar.
Yeah, he
third is. Home run of the season.
He's a strong boy.
They're talking about it in game one, too, how he hadn't hit a home run yet. You knew he was itching to finally get one. And he went off.
Francisco here in the eighth inning.
This is now a 4-2 ball game.
And the shutout streak.
Getting it done once again. No doubter to left. Get a fastball from Whistler. You don't see too many of them.
Now the tying men are on for Miami. And it's up to Lewis Brinson.
And that one gets over the head of Lascella into right field. Birdie scores.
Leon is this where Reddit was going crazy?
Yeah, everyone was losing their minds.
And now it's Jazz Chisholm Jr.
Ground ball to second.
And then, you know, no problem.
In time.
Got it.
We all had to sweat it
out. I love that Jazz Chisholm is a junior. I mean, the fact that a guy out there named Jazz Chisholm was like, this name's good enough. I'm going to name my kid the same thing.
What are you going to say? Yeah, I know Jazz is his nickname. I forget his full, like, first name. It's something a little more, a lot more complex than that.
Oh, that sucks. That totally ruins what I thought. Damn.
No. Unfortunately, Jazz is his nickname.
Jazz is not his given name, huh?
It's not his given name. Right. No, it's kind of like Buster. You know, it's something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's fair.
All right, so
his real
number.
Name is Gerald
or Eldridge, like Tiger Woods.
Yeah, Tiger, exactly. So I don't know. The one thing that really stood out to me for this four game series was the starters again. 27 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, and only 8 hits. That's freaking crazy, man. I mean, how can the Giants can't expect any more than that. That is off the charts. I mean, if it's two earned runs a start, that's excelling. This is two earned runs in four starts. So, I mean, that's incredible. I don't know what else to say. I think that's the whole reason they won three out of four. Obviously, their bats didn't really do that much. They did just enough to win three games. But, you know, if the starters were at the league average right now, Giants would have lost three out of four easily in this series.
Oh, I'm sure. The thing about, I mean, we got to give credit to the pitching coaches. And I know there's Andrew Bailey. I wanted to say Patrick, but that's the kid who's in the system. Andrew Bailey. And then I don't remember who the assistant pitching coach is, but we have to give credit to them. And, you know, the talent is just getting it done right now. For some reason, being in San Francisco seems to be a place that starters want to pitch, and we can see it with the ballpark. But two earned runs, what is that? That's three full games with the eight hits. That's what I don't understand. How easy it seemed for Wood to shut them down. How easy it seemed for Gausman to shut the Marlins down. Like, it seemed a lot easier than I expected it to. And these are, you know, decent major league players. The Marlins are not the horrible, horrible Marlins of the past. I mean, they did make the playoffs last year.
Yeah. That's right. Didn't they pretty much have the same record as the Giants? It was very close, right? It was like,
yeah, I think difference. So. They were one game better.
Yeah. Yeah. The Giants lost their last three. All right. Let's talk a little bit about injuries. We heard a little bit from those highlights, but Kapler said that Johnny Cueto will miss his third consecutive start this week. Donovan Solano was also placed on the 10-day injured list last Thursday for his bum ankle. Garcia was placed on the 10-day IL with a left groin strain. Longo, Crawford, and Flores and Yaz are all listed as day-to-day with various ailments.
Jesus Christ.
When you take Solano, Longo,
how are they
Crawford,
14-8?
And Yaz, right? That's half of their, like, optimum starting lineup out of their top eight, right? So they could be missing half of their offense is already struggling. And they're going to potentially be missing half of their lineup tonight against
Colorado. The good news is we're playing Colorado. So,
yeah.
You know.
No, I mean, give it's not in Colorado, thank God. You know, if it was
true.
In Colorado,
yeah, no,
worried.
Actually, that would be bad. But, I mean, we're playing a team we can still beat without our top guys. So,
yeah.
Like, at least it's coming at a good time. Especially a lot of this seems like little dings and not, you know, serious. Oh, you're out for, you know, a month or whatever. A lot of this just seems like we're precautionary and letting people make sure that they're not playing with like actual, you know, strains and stuff like that. So,
yeah. I didn't really line it all up, but I guess Vossler would be taken third because Flores and Longo are gone and Crawford, I mean, and Solano, all those freaking infielders you're going to have. Yeah.
There's like a whole infield that's banged up right now.
You're going to have Doobie at short, Listel at second, and Belt at first. So I guess that's how they're going to have to roll.
I mean, you're right. You're thankful it's the Rockies. They're in turmoil. Their GM stepped down this morning.
I didn't hear that.
You know, isn't really shocking considering he pissed off the franchise and then traded him to St. Louis. I mean, the Rockies are a hot mess, so it's nice that the Giants get them twice at home within the first month of the season. You know, you want to win these games. These are the games, you know, this is why they're 14-8, because they have been beating teams like the Rockies and the Marlins. And, you know, you want to continue winning this 1993 expansion tour that came to the ballpark this week.
That's right. and then, as noted in that last game, Jason Vossler was called up, got his first big league hit, so we're gonna apparently be relying on him for the next week or so in the infield, so we'll see how that rolls. All right, I got a new bumper for our segment, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. That's right. All right, so let's talk about the good. We already mentioned this before. Giant starters are excelling. Their starting ERA for the entire year now stands at 2.26, second best in all of baseball, just behind Milwaukee's 2.22. Their team ERA is also the second best in all of baseball at 2.94. San Diego's doing really well. Their bullpen and starters combined are 2.75, so they're quite a bit ahead of the Giants there. Alex Dickerson has been heating up recently over the last week. He's 7 for 20. That's a 350 clip, so that's good to see. And Yaz is also hitting 308 over that span. you look at the rest of the hitters and no one else is doing great things over the last week or two. So their team average is starting to creep up, but ever so slowly right now. The bullpen is ninth in the National League in ERA at 4.21. So they have been slipping lately. Granted, they haven't been blowing every game, but you know, it's something that could be of concern, especially as they tax Rogers and McGee a little bit more. And the ugly, the Giants are dead last in the National League in on-base percentage, which is something that Farhan really values, at 291. I mean, 291, oof, that's, when you're under 300 for on-base percentage as a team, that's really god-awful. And they're an MLB third worst in batting average at 215, although last week they were 212, and the week before that they were 209. So it's starting to creep up ever so slowly. And then they're also third worst in runs scored. But that's also been slowly rising in the last 2 weeks. And what's saving them is obviously not just the pitching, but on the offense side of things, they have the third highest home run total in the National League. And a lot of those home runs, as we've noted before, are coming at big situations, including those five pinch hit home runs they've had so far this year. So that's definitely adding additional wins to probably what would have been their expected win total should they have spread those home runs over, you know, normal situations, I would say.
Well, it's kind of crazy and the ugly with them being the third worst in runs scored. They are the second best as pitching as far as allowing runs, and that would put them best at runs per game because the Mets are behind them who have played five less games. So, I mean, they've only allowed 70 runs and they scored 80 runs. So yep. Amazingly, you know, it's we talked about how we thought there'd be a bunch of 8-7 games and they really haven't been happening yet. This offense is not clicking at all. And they keep saying, we think we're going to get out of it. But, you know, once a couple guys start getting it, these injuries are not going to help at all. So you just, I guess we kind of like hope and pray that the pitching can hang on while they deal with the injury situations right now, because the depth, it's killing them that they're not, you know, able to stay as deep and have as many hitters in the lineup right now as they normally do. It is ugly, though, when you've only scored 80 runs in, what is that, 22 games? That's less than four runs a game for a team that we thought would be scoring six or seven.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I can say is at least the pitching is excelling when the offense is struggling, and that's the time you want that to occur, right? I mean, if both are clicking on all cylinders, don't get me wrong, you're going to win a bunch of blowouts and it's going to be a lot of fun. But if both the offense and pitching is struggling at the same time, you're obviously losing a ton of games in the same fashion. So we'll take it. I mean, the offense has got to heat up at some point and the pitching is going to cool off at some point. But if they kind of keep, you know, this momentum, I mean, I admit I'm surprised by this team. Even though it's only been 22 games, I like to say that, you know, a quarter of the way, 40 games is really when you start to get an idea of the team. But they're more than halfway to that check mark, I would say, in my mind. And that's just my opinion. Even if they played a little under 500 until that 40-game mark, they're going to be at or above 500 then. So they're blowing my expectations out of the water. And I guess they're catching a lot of the people by surprise, too. So for those listeners out there who are throwing out, you know, 88, 89, 90 wins. I'm not saying you're going to be right, but you definitely have more credence to believe those numbers at this point. At least you have a little bit of evidence.
They need to play some tougher opponents. Like we mentioned at the top, they haven't played the Dodgers yet. They've played the Padres one time and taken two of three. They, you know, the interdivisional, even those games against Arizona are going to be battles just because it's interdivisional type games. You know, and they haven't faced the best teams in the other divisions. All we've really seen are the Reds and the Marlins so far outside of the Giants division, or at least outside of the teams they played last year. So, you know, this next month should be telling a little bit. They've got, you know, Colorado here, and then they go to San Diego. There's a lot of Colorado early. It's really beneficial for getting out to a good start. And then, you know, looking through May, the only real tests are Cincinnati and the Dodgers again. So they could be in a position come later in this towards the All-Star break where they really are still threatening, you know, at least second place in the division.
Yeah. No, it's we'll take it, I guess, you know. In the years past, too, they've also played the Dodgers really, really well. And I don't know what it is about the Dodgers, no matter who's good, who's bad. You know, of course, the Dodgers have been good for 8 straight years, but they seem to play to each other's level. I don't know what it is. You know, the Giants last year, I think they played the Dodgers, what, 10 times? I think they were 4-6 against them. They hung around. You know, they did okay. So the Giants can maintain close to 500. They'll be all right. All right, you just mentioned Arizona, and let's go ahead and talk about it. This around the league, something notable, and that's what Major League Baseball is considering this now, a notable achievement. But our old friend, Madison Bumgarner.
Wow, it's a gold star, huh?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Allowed no hits through 7 innings. Now, normally, a lot of people would call this a no-hitter. However, this was the second game of a doubleheader. And, of course, this year, as like last year during the pandemic, they have shortened these games to put less stress on the players, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hopefully the 7-inning doubleheaders go away at some point, hopefully next year. But this is the rules they're playing with this year. So through no fault of Madison Bumgarner or the Diamondbacks or anyone involved except for, you know, the club owners and Roger Manfred, he had 7 innings. That's what he was assigned to do, and he did it, and he allowed no hits. But I think it was a couple of years ago Major League Baseball did clarify the rules saying anything less than 9 innings would be considered a notable achievement if you allowed no hits. So this is not technically a
Wait. You're telling me that they made that determination a couple of years ago before COVID happened, and they made this new determination that doubleheaders should be 7 innings.
Exactly.
So we're going to apply old pre-pandemic rules to the post-pandemic world, and we're going to penalize a guy who didn't even walk anybody, by the way. The only guy who reached on an error. He faced literally the minimum because he actually ended up getting that guy out who did reach base. So, and you're saying he couldn't have gotten 2 more innings and gotten like 6 more outs. I don't know, man. The whole thing seems silly to me. But I guess, you know, the good news is that means we're taking away the Dodgers World Series title because that was a notable achievement.
It was a notable achievement.
But I don't think we can give you a World Series title without 162 games at least, you know. So, I mean, we made that determination a couple years ago.
That's my gripe with this. These are the rules. He played within the rules.
Yeah, let's go ahead and take a look at the last out or two here of Bumgarner's no hit.
And Peralta, Nick in foul ground, and he's got it. 2 outs in the 7th. Ooh.
Yeah, like how did the players celebrate? I didn't even watch this yet.
Yeah, this is, you'll see how they celebrate.
Right field, Rojas is there. Madison Bumgarner, a complete game shutout.
Very subdued.
No hits for the Braves in 7, and the Diamondbacks sweep the doubleheader. They win game 2-7-0. Look at that.
Congratulations on your notable achievement, sir. You have a notable achievement.
A little bit.
Is not one for dog piles in the middle of the field, but his teammates are going to mob him.
Oh, yes, he is.
He retired the final 17 batters he faced. He did not give up a walk. He did not give up a hit. He faced the minimum through 7.
Yeah. There you go.
What?
He didn't want to celebrate it, but he steered into it when they all started jumping on him.
No,
I love how the announcer goes, he's not one for dog piles. I'm like, you don't know Madison like I do, because yes, he absolutely is one for dog piles. I've seen him involved in several, actually.
Oh, man. I wish I had some of the quotes. And I know he had pretty much a mic drop. He was getting interviewed by the Arizona TV station or whatever. And he basically said, they asked him, do you think this is a no-hitter? And he's like, basically, did I allow any hits? Hey, I got to go party with the guys. And he just like dropped the headset. Yeah, and they're like, okay, that's it.
Got on a horse and rode off into the sunset.
I mean, that's why it's, you know, the rule that was put in place a few years ago is to deal with weather issues, not deal with, you know, COVID pre-scheduling issues. Yep. If these are the rules, these are the rules. And the man followed the rules. I mean, it's amazing they only allowed one hit over the whole doubleheader against the Braves.
14 innings.
I mean, the Braves, too, of all teams. It's not like it was doing this against the Pirates. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Bum has been horrible all year. And he probably felt good with a 5-run lead after that top of the first, and that sent him out there. Because I have to wonder if they didn't score 5 in the top of the first, if Bum still would have been able to cruise through the day. But, you know, he threw a no-hitter. To me, it's the 3rd of the season. But apparently we're not recognizing this notable achievement.
This notable achievement. Yeah, you know, it's funny because we've had some trivia, you know, on some other podcasts as well. Or Willie and I, you know, we had the Hard Edition trivia where some no hitters and perfect games were thrown in there. Mm-hmm. And that was the one thing that you look back on and you're like, you had Jonathan Sanchez, you had two by Lincecum, you had Heston, you had Matt Cain, right? You have like five no hitters in like seven seasons or whatever. And not one by Madison Bumgarner.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Ty actually guess Madison Bumgarner when he guessed. Because he was like, he must have one, right? Nope. That's the guy. Yeah. No, he never had one.
Yeah, it's really weird. But, I mean, he's still sitting at he's 2-2 with a 6.31 ERA this year. But yeah,
I really think he's doing a lot better. I think he gave his arm for 2014. He robbed it, and that's his story. But he'll never take away 2014. But
no, you did
take away his arm strength.
That's why I'm not sure he can do this again. He's not going to always get staked to a 5-run lead and be able to go out there like he did. I mean, that was vintage bum, I guess. And, you know, maybe he'll have another flash or two like that. But I agree. His ERA is going to be like 4-5, you know, something this year, 5. He's going to get beat around a little bit.
I think that's going to be good, you know, for him. I know it's sad. You want this guy to succeed so bad, you know. And I, for one, was like, you know, you got to trade this guy and, you know, get some value for him. We were kind of on that train a couple years ago and it didn't happen. And because the Giants were kind of making a little playoff push. Remember that around the All-Star break, they were hanging around. So I think Farhead and crew decided to keep him on, also put some butts in the seats, but whatever. It didn't work out. He walks, he signs with Arizona, but it was kind of like, you know, the Giants were like, all right, we're done with that contract. And so far, it's looking like a really good decision to never have even considered.
Look, I mean, props to him. He did get his one big contract still. You know, whether it's going to pan out for it's like the Barry Zito contract a little bit. You know what I mean? It's like you're paying for the years he had before. Although I guess it's not as long. So I don't know, but whatever. It feels kind of similar. If you were a Diamondbacks fan, you're kind of pissed about it, right?
Yeah.
Because he hasn't panned out. But, I don't care. He has I'm happy for him. Yeah, he got this notable achievement, and we're all happy for him.
And 4 years from now, he'll pitch in the NLCS and for the Diamondbacks and the World Series for the Diamondbacks, like Zito did for our Giants.
Right. He'll have like an amazing game when they really need it. I mean, that'd be a cool way to end this story.
Yeah. That kind of would, because playoff Bumgarner is the legend, so it'd be awesome if he were to be able to add to that again. But hopefully he's not going to get that chance with the Giants, Padres, and Dodgers ahead of them.
Nope. Yeah. No, I don't think this year.
Do it against the Dodgers, and then we'll win it all, right? Yeah. That'd be okay.
We'll do something like that. That's good. All right, well, coming up, the Giants will welcome in the Colorado Rockies 4-3 once again, and then head on the road for 3 in San Diego. And they've already had 3 in San Diego. So it is weird. The beginning of the season has been a couple of repeat trips, right? Colorado coming here twice, and the Giants going to San Diego twice before they've even played L.A. or Arizona. It's an odd way to start the season, but that's what happens with some of these, idiosyncrasies in the scheduling. But it's going to be another good test for, you know, the Giants. Of course, Tatis went down. That was actually during the Giants series when he went on the injured list with his shoulder or whatever wrist issue. But he's back, man. Look at him in the LA series. He was tattooing the ball and having a great time. So. He's fun to watch. He's dangerous, and you know, see if the Giants can contain him. But that'll be it for episode 222. We'll be back next Monday to review the next 6 games that the Giants have. We'll be live again on Facebook. You can of course catch our audio podcast on your favorite audio feed, audio podcast catcher. You can also find it at torchcast.com. You can follow us collectively at Torchcast on Twitter, or individually at ChadK21 for myself, at 2OutHits with the number 2 for Eric. And at Willie Dills for Willie. Willie, what else you got going on besides MGA and Hard Edition? You can mention those.
Hard Edition. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be doing a special guest episode, I hope. We're going to have the return of Naim, who did we're going to try to bring him back. I don't know if we're going to have like a whole, you know, trivia segment this time, but just because Bryce is out, you know, I figured we might see if he's around, but we're not sure yet. Sure. But if you are interested, check that out. Hardedition.podbean.com is the way to find it, or just search Hard Edition in your podcast app, and then twitch.tv/WillieDills, where you can find me streaming the Hearthstone. I'm trying to hit triple legend this season because there's a new mode now called Classic. So now there's literally three ladders you can climb to legend. I've already hit it in two, but I'm going for the triple crown. So come join me there and see if I can become Miguel Cabrera or not.
Oh, Willie, you'll still be a legend in our eyes.
Oh, thanks, guys. I mean, I still am a two-time legend regardless, but I'm trying to become that.
Trying to get that triple crown.
You know, right. Exactly. Trying to be the 2014 Giants and, you know, make it a dynasty here.
Yeah, but do they have the notable achievement level?
They do, that's probably what I'll end up getting. Yeah.
Eric, what about yourself?
Just go to Giants Chatter on Facebook, join the group. It's a lot of fun. We have game day threads. Yesterday's had 790 comments on a Sunday afternoon. Yeah, that just blows my mind because there's only 420 people in the group. So it's kind of crazy. So Giants Chatter on Facebook, and that's all I got. Keep listening to TortureCast. Listen to also my buddy Doug, the Say Hey podcast. They put out a new episode this week, also talking about the Kapler decision, if you want to go a little more in-depth on that as well, because it got every one of us watching the games was trying to figure that one out. So Giants Chatter Facebook.
Yeah, it's a good non-toxic environment so far.
we're keeping it that way, man. We got a good admin team.
We need to do like
the admin team, and others are doing a good job. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, because I was gonna say do like the early Facebook thing where it's like invite only, but it kind of is like that at this point, right? Because
we've been got to get approved. We had Flan join us. He just popped in the group. I noticed and commented on something. Yeah, right. So that's kind of fun. I know Marty Lurie lurks back there somewhere as well.
Marty's always up for game. You just got to email him, man. He like passes that email out like candy, and his phone number. He's like, I'll talk to anyone. So, hey, you guys should have him on, or at some point. We should have him on. I've interviewed him a couple of times, but we'll have him back at some point. So, okay, that'll do it for episode 222. We'll see you next Monday for episode 223. For Eric and Willie, this is Chad signing off. We'll see you next time. Abu.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.